Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Bold, Beautiful, Borderline podcast. It's Sarah, and today we are going to start to look at, in kind of like a unique format, my profound fucking feeling that I am so stupid and that I'll never be worthy unless I appear smart, but not even just like appear smart in the like letters after your name and degrees on your wall and all of that junk, which my college degrees are in a box in my garage that my husband has all of his Dungeons and Dragons books in, because that shit doesn't matter. But it's been a lifelong and continues to be a lifelong struggle to believe that I am intelligent enough to stay alive. And this started with my experience in the public school system and never being as smart as my peers and always expecting myself to like participate in these advanced classes to try to like make my mom proud. And so the way we're going to talk about this at first is I'm going to give you an insight into my recent licensed clinical social worker exam. So the first part of this kind of experience is a recording that I did right before I took my exam. And then we're going to listen to the recording that I did right after I took my exam. But then we're going to get into more kind of like real life conversations about what happens when I feel stupid, because that's such a big trigger of mine. And Talon is going to join me on the podcast to talk about it, which, spoiler alert, I get very fucking dysregulated. And there's actually like video of him and I talking about this where you can see physically that I'm very dysregulated. So that will probably pop up somewhere. I don't know if that will pop up on Patreon or if I'll try to figure out the login for our YouTube, which Lori started and is very exciting. But stay tuned on what I look like when I start to feel like someone's telling me I'm not smart enough, because holy trigger alert, that is not great for my borderline. Okay, let's get into it. Okay, so I have never done this for the podcast before. I'm like recording on a like tape recorder. It literally looks like a tape recorder from the 90s, which, side note, I think we probably have listeners that never had a Walkman or listened to Hey Mickey, You're So Fine on their Minnie Mouse tape deck, thinking that that song was actually referring to Mickey Mouse. I think my parents just like let me believe that, because what's the alternative with your like 5-year-old child running around in her Minnie Mouse digs? So, deep breath. I am in just outside of Seattle, and I am sitting in the testing center parking lot for my first attempt at the LCSW exam, licensed clinical social worker. And I've been kind of like hinting at that I've been studying and preparing for this exam for a while now, but I haven't spoken publicly about like, I am taking this exam and this is when I am taking it and this is what it means, because I don't want to publicly have to say, y'all, I failed my LCSW exam. Here's the thing that, like, if you're not in the field, let me just give you a rundown, right? So like, you go get your undergrad degree, 4 years, you go get your graduate degree, 3 years, $100,000+ is wrapped up into that. Don't get me started on that, the capitalism of academia, right? We know it's all of these things, ableist, racist, sexist, but very largely capitalistic. You do that, and then you're like, oh man, and now I have my graduate degree. Like, I am
I am a graduate of the Master of Social Work program from the University of Washington. I really know what the fuck I'm talking about. Wrongo. Like, these degrees don't prepare you for a practical application of the work. And so, like, people who want to do very focused clinical work, therapy, group therapy, those kinds of things, then sit for a licensure exam. That includes, in the state of Oregon, 4,000 hours. I think 2,500 or maybe 3,000 of those are direct client hours. 1,000 are just general hours. So, like, case notes and research and all of these things. And then you have 100 supervision hours, which means like one-on-one hour-long sessions with your clinical supervisor, who's been a social worker forever and ever, and they staff cases with you, and they tell you, well, they don't tell you, but they coach you and they guide you to being an ethical practitioner, essentially. So you get out of your undergrad, you go into your grad degree, you finish your grad degree, and then you do 3 more years where you pay sometimes hundreds of dollars an hour for supervision. And you find an employer who is willing to have you work for them unlicensed under that clinical supervisor. Meaning, if I were ever to like do anything egregiously wrong, essentially malpractice, my clinical supervisor takes some of the liability with me because she was overseeing the work that I was doing. And then all of this comes to this one exam, right? The LCSW exam. I don't even really know where to begin to unpack my feelings about this, other than to say I have a lot of them. I have so much more anxiety than probably most people know, because I talk a lot about my depression and how debilitating it is. Anxiety is really hard for me to admit. Like, there's something about anxiety being my own failure, even though I know that's not true. It's like I can't reframe, or I can't control my body, or fuck, all of these things. And I have been confronted with the impact of my anxiety in this process more than I think I have in a really long time, largely because I isolate myself. Sometimes I think I'm like damn near agoraphobic. Like, I'm not, because obviously I go out into the world and do a million things, but I only go out into very specific places of the world. I go on trails, I go to lakes, I go places where there aren't people, because interacting with people is terrifying for me. This exam and having to say what the outcome is of it means confronting, not only with myself, but with my supervisor, with my partner, with my friends, did I pass or not pass? 10 years of work, $150,000 of investment, thousands of client sessions where I have done well and not done well, right? Where I have been helpful and not been helpful. All of this comes down to, can you pass a 170 question multiple choice exam? That doesn't feel fair to me. It doesn't feel like an accurate representation of who I am as a social worker, and it just is what it is. Like, I'm not going to fight that system right now. It's brought up a lot of recognition of the impact of being raised by a public school educator who couldn't see that I was neurodivergent. I didn't get my ADHD diagnosis until a year ago. I went through college largely feeling like a failure at times because I didn't perform academically the same way my peers did. I know this sounds silly, because I got my graduate degree at 23, y'all. Way ahead of my peers. Why did I do that? Because I wanted to feel worthy. I spent my entire public school education being in advanced classes, but never being as good as my peers. I didn't take a single general education class in high school. I tested and interviewed into the International Baccalaureate program. Not a single general ed class. I left high school at 16 and started college classes. I have never put myself in rooms with what we would call typical development, because I was convinced that if I can just perform more, better, quicker, stronger, more clear, then I would be worthy. I'm almost 30 years old and I'm confronting this fear that I have still built my worth on all of these external systems that are ableist, that are racist, that are capitalistic, that don't care that I have ADHD, that don't care that I have a 23% working memory, that don't care that I have processing issues. On a system that doesn't have the same values as me. If you're following me on Instagram, you've seen the practice questions about people with borderline. Not only are they literally not correct per the DSM-5 criteria, but they're highly stigmatized. I'm recording this because I wanted a before testing kind of like overview of where I was at, but I didn't have it in me to do it last night, because I am going to talk about this experience on the podcast, whether I pass this exam or not. I may only talk about this experience on the podcast once I have passed the exam, because I am not ready to confront that level of shame. I'll be okay to say, oh yeah, maybe I took the exam 3 times, but I finally passed it. There's a lot more work for me to do in unpacking this fear and this trauma and this like fundamental lack of worth that exists within me. I don't know that I will ever get there. All I know is that I can not stop trying. This kind of chat is like an invite into my brain in a really vulnerable moment, but also like a pep talk for myself of, Sarah, you're going to go in and you're going to take this test, knowing that you prepared for it. You didn't prepare perfectly. There's no such thing. Knowing that you are a good social worker. You're not a perfect social worker. There's no such thing. Knowing that you are invested in the work that you do in this community with people. This test doesn't care about those things. So you don't have to care about it back. You just have to go in and do it. I gotta go in like 10, 15 minutes. So I'm gonna go back to my cope ahead plan. I'm gonna deep breathe. I'm gonna do some self-compassion, self-validating statements. And then I'm just gonna fucking take it, y'all. And like, it's okay if I have to take it more than once. A lot of social workers do. Testing is not a measure of our worth. Testing is not a measure of our intelligence. Stay tuned. Okay, so I just took my test. I haven't looked at the results yet. Because I was like, I need nicotine and I don't know that I want to open them yet. I just wanted to like walk out of there, take a deep breath, hit my vape, and let myself just be proud that I tackled this thing that's so fucking scary. I am using every skill that I have in the book, y'all. And also I wanted to like fucking open it live. So let's do the damn thing. Congratulations. You have passed the ASWB clinical examination. Within 2 weeks, your score will be automatically forwarded to the board and jurisdiction in which you wish to be licensed. Clinical examination results report. The exam taken requires 103 correct answers to pass. You answered 123 questions correctly. I'm so fucking relieved. Oh God, I'm so relieved. I'm so relieved. Oh my God, I'm so relieved. Okay, more to come. I gotta talk to Talon.
Okay, so keep in mind, I took my exam in the spring. I think it was, let's see, March, April, May. I think it was like early June that I finally got my like license number assigned to me and all of those things. So I haven't like started to talk about this until now, which is March, almost 1 year. And it's because I wanted to tie it into my severe trigger around feeling stupid, which has been coming up a lot. Here we are full circle, because Talon and I are doing these kind of like small, I like to call it a non-remodel remodel, aka cheap girl version of making her house cute, but she can't afford new cabinets. So we've been doing that, but I have been finding holy shit, trigger, trigger, trigger. He's telling me what to do. He thinks I'm stupid. I can do this on my own, but then my emotion regulation doesn't let me, and all of these like things. So Talon and I finally sat down to record about this and all of my fears and triggers around being stupid, particularly because in childhood, I couldn't pay attention in class and I got kicked out of class all the time. And then I got in trouble and I did really well in classes that I liked, but classes I didn't like math and science, were so fucking hard for me. I just knew I was the stupidest one in the class. So I just started copying people and, all of those things. I had no idea what was going on. And so that's led to this lifelong trigger of not being smart enough. Okay. Talon and I, we're going to talk about it. And again, just to prepare you, hella borderline response. Okay, so Talon doesn't know what we're talking about today, but one of the things that's like recently come up as a huge trigger for me, and actually it's super connected to this recording that I made before I completed, like walked in the door for my LSCW exam. That I'm going to put into this podcast so that people can hear how I was feeling before my exam, because the topic of this podcast is that I am highly triggered by anything that makes me feel stupid.
Yes, you are.
And that has been coming up a lot for us lately.
Yeah, it has, yeah.
And it's been very distressing for me.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like a normal trigger for women, particularly like undiagnosed, untreated ADHD. But I'm 30 years old and very educated, and I do have under average intelligence as related to my IQ testing, but I've been able to get pretty far, and yet I am still crazy triggered by anything that makes me feel stupid. So let's talk about it because it's been coming up a lot lately. What is your experience, thoughts about this from the partner perspective?
Well, not to interject my own like past experiences with that, but I think it's relevant. It's weird to be able to see us.
I know. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is cool. So my entire life, for the most part, I've been told that I have a tone.
A tone.
I have a tone. And not everybody has agreed with this, but it's been a reoccurring theme in my life, even since I was like little or whatever. And I have a tone in the way I say things, or the way I ask questions, or like the way I'm in conversation with somebody. I've gotten a lot that people think that I am a know-it-all, or think that I'm smarter than somebody else, or that I'm like stuck up, or I guess like yeah, just think I'm like better.
I just want to make sure I say though, this is not specific to you.
No, I know that.
This is a long-standing, I have always felt stupid, and I fucking hate anybody who triggers that in me.
Right, so like, I'm just bringing my own personal, I guess I'm just bringing my history like before I met you, so it's ironic that I married someone who was triggered by feeling stupid, and sure, I have been told the vast majority of my life that I am talking to people like they're stupid, which is interesting because you've never told me that my tone is doing that, unless like it, you know, like the only time I think that like you've ever like told me that I was making you feel stupid or whatever is like the way I phrase my questions. Right. And like, I've been doing a lot of like, well, not research, but like,
I don't know that it's the way, I mean, maybe it is, but sometimes I feel like you just start telling me what we're going to do.
Yes.
So like the other day when you were like, we're talking about remodeling our kitchen, but from the perspective of like, or not our kitchen, our bathroom, but from the perspective of like, down and dirty, cheap, get in, make it look cute. We don't have the money to tear shit out right now. Mm-hmm. So I have done a shitload of research about how to like sand the tub, paint the tub with like the specific paint for bathtubs and sinks and whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I found like the most beautiful like glass with like black frame bathroom.
It's like a half shower
door. Half shower door to make it like very pretty. Mm-hmm. And I found this like beautiful rainwater shower head. And then I found peel and stick tiling. Motherfucker, I have watched so many Instagram reels and videos of all of these, like, I mean, granted, like, stay-at-home mom influencer people who have a ton of time to do this.
Sure.
Whereas I'm working two jobs and have been since Vietnam. So I don't have a ton of time.
Yeah.
And I especially don't have a ton of time or a ton of money to pull up our flooring and put real tile in.
Yeah.
And you and I are not the type of people, I think, who would benefit from doing that in smaller spaces like bathrooms or even like my gym or the garage, because let's be real, we're going to want to change it.
Yeah.
You know,
we're
going to want to change it eventually because it's fun for us to do, because visually things could just like randomly become no longer pleasing to us. I digress. Talon hits me with, well, we need to pull up the flooring to put peel and stick tile down. And I'm like, whoa, 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 sir.
Yeah.
And I was like feeling like you were telling me what to do. And instantly I was like, do you think I'm fucking stupid? Do you think I haven't fucking watched hours of a video about how people put peel and stick tile down without tearing up their flooring? That's the whole point of peel and stick tile.
Right. Right. And
you just fucking walk in here not having spent the hours of time I spent building an entire dream for this bathroom, a color palette, and like the way to make this like tub insert beautiful without taking it out. And like, I ordered the stuff already, and I have like know the steps, and you know.
Yeah.
So I present all of this information to Talon, like the wonderful wife that I am. And he's like, yeah, I think that's gonna be great. We need to pull the flooring up.
So I did say that. And my reasoning behind saying that is like, we talked about it and I was able to like communicate why I said that originally. Should I have started with, we need to pull the tile up? No, absolutely not.
Well, and it instantly left me feeling flooded. It instantly left me feeling really invalidated of like, Like, it's funny to be like, I'm fucking pissed at you, you dirtbag. But really what was happening was like, well, wait a minute. Like, I just invested a lot of time, energy, $300, $400 and like buying these supplies. Yeah. I have a plan.
And it was going to be your project.
It was going to be my project. And I feel like you're telling me like I'm not smart enough or capable enough to do this thing that I've like invested a lot of time in. And it just has really triggered that. My whole life, I didn't have the emotion regulation and the task completion skills because of untreated, borderline, untreated, undiagnosed ADHD in order to do projects like this. And now I do. So my whole life, I felt stupid because I couldn't complete A, B, and C.
Right.
And now I can. And you're walking in here telling me I'm already got my plan wrong.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I didn't yell at you.
No.
I was just like, well, you, I literally said, well, you do the remodel then. And I think you were really confused.
I was, because like what happened with me in my head is I just jumped to, so in our kitchen and the downstairs bathroom, right? It all shares one floor. In our kitchen, Sarah and I, a few months ago, discovered that they just put the laminate fake hardwood flooring over the kitchen.
Old laminate.
The kitchen linoleum.
Yeah, or linoleum.
Right.
This house was literally built in like the 50s, yeah. And it was originally three garages.
Yeah,
just as you can see if you're watching this video,
sorry,
we are sitting in our office and tattoo studio. And the back wall is white shingles.
Yeah, it's cedar. It's painted white cedar shingles.
Because this didn't exist.
Right.
Right.
So
shit's a little wonky.
Right. So, like, I, in my head, was, like, listening to her plan. I was like, I love that. And then she started talking about peel and stick tile. As she was talking about peel and stick tile, I was also thinking while listening to her, I'm like, well, peel and stick tile, that's a great idea. That's inexpensive. And I was like, yeah, we could put it over the
and can be easily changed if we're like, oh, you know what? This vibe, not the one.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. Comes up, whatever. And I was like, okay, that's a great idea. And I was like, well, in my head, while listening to her talk about her whole plan, I'm still stuck back at, oh, peel and stick tile on the laminate, the wood floor, right? The fake wood floor. And I'm like, well, if the kitchen and that bathroom all share a floor, in my head, I'm like, there's a good chance there's linoleum under the fake wood laminate, right? And so in my head, I'm like, well, we should just pull that up and then put the peel and stick on the linoleum so we don't have the potential of water going under the peel and stick under the laminate, right? It was just, you know, that. But I didn't say that. I'm like,
well, wait a minute.
I didn't say that.
I'm like,
I said, let's.
But also, let's go over that. So we have laminate on top of linoleum. Mm-hmm. You're worried about water getting to linoleum from the peel and stick tile. If water was going to get to the linoleum, it would be doing it right now.
Right. No, I know. I'm not worried about the linoleum. I'm worried about water sitting underneath the laminate flooring, that flooring eventually warping because it's not waterproof or watertight, and then our floor is warped and then we have to pull
so and then I'm trying to explain, so we're I'm getting triggered again, so okay. Then I'm trying to explain to him, well, we can grout it because I've already watched hours and hours of video about how to do this.
Right.
I've seen women successfully do this by putting peel and stick tile on top of the fake vinyl flooring that we have.
Right.
And all I want to be like is, do you think I'm fucking stupid?
No, I don't. I was just trying to explain like why I was thinking.
We can't even fucking put this podcast out now because I'm just like triggered.
What? I was just trying to say like what I was thinking and why I led with we need to pull the floor out. I'm not saying that we need to pull the floor out. I was just saying that that's what I was thinking.
Right. But how would pulling the floor up to then have the linoleum be any different than just putting peel and stick tile on top of the vinyl? Because if you're worried about water getting down to the linoleum, it's already going to get down potentially through the vinyl to the linoleum. Putting peel and stick down isn't going to change that possibility because it's going on top of the vinyl.
No, I'm aware of that. My thought process was, is the vinyl glued to the linoleum, therefore not allowing as much water to get under it? Or is it like in the kitchen where it's just floating on top of it? Because
how would that change my peel and stick tile?
Well, do you remember when Storm knocks the water over and then you step on a board and then all the water comes up and out?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
But that's already happening. If that's already happening, why do we have to change in order for me to do what I want to do?
I was just thinking that if we took that out of the bathroom, that would happen less with, like, a full... Like, taking those out, maybe that would help that not happen as much if it was just linoleum and then peel and stick.
Okay.
That's all I was saying. I'm not saying you have to do that. That was just
how would that happen less?
Because the peel and stick would be, like, fully adhesed to the linoleum and not floating on top of it, just sitting there. Like the
but the vinyl is adhesed to the fucking linoleum.
No, that's what I'm saying. I don't know if it is, because it doesn't seem like it is in the kitchen. That's what I was saying.
How would putting peel and stick tile down onto the vinyl and then grouting around it change? Like, you're trying to tell me that your idea would be better.
No, I'm not.
Okay. Well, I'm just a fucking idiot. So the podcast that we were trying to do was that we had the same result.
I'm just.
You're just what?
I'm feeling a little frustrated because the last time we had this particular argument, we got to a place where we were both understanding each other. And I feel like I'm explaining it the same way, and we're not in that place now. And so I'm not really understanding.
Well, you're doing the same thing, which is telling me what we have to do, telling me that your knowledge of this flooring is more than mine.
No, I'm not. I'm literally, I was.
And you're getting defensive again.
I am not trying to be defensive. I am trying to, I was trying to explain why I led with, we need to rip up the floor. That's all I was trying to do. That's all I was trying to do. I'm not saying that I'm right. I'm not saying that we still need to rip up the floor.
Fucking rip it up. I don't care. It's the same thing. If you are telling me that that is what we have to do to protect our flooring, and that's more important, and me putting peel and stick tile down is going to change this possibility radically of water getting to the linoleum, even though the only way it would change would be if I fucking put a hole in the vinyl.
I'm not saying that we need to rip the floor up. I was trying to explain.
Right, and I am trying to understand why you think that.
I don't think that anymore because you were like, what does it matter? It doesn't change anything. Like, and I was like, yeah, you're right. I'm not saying we need to do that.
Okay, but this whole thing, again, it's like you went into it again by saying what we needed to do. And when you say what we need to do, it triggers me. And then we go through this whole thing, and now I feel like a piece of shit because I'm the bad guy, because I'm triggered by something. Because the way that you say it makes me feel like you're telling me that you're smarter than me because you thought of this thing that I didn't think of. As if I haven't watched all of these videos about how you can do this successfully. That is the point of peel and stick tile, so that you don't have to rip up the floor. So you don't have to do a giant remodel.
Right. I understand that. I'm not saying that I'm smarter than you because I thought of something. It was just a concern that I had.
I know, but I feel like you're saying it again, that this is an issue in the way that you've reviewed this conversation.
I don't feel like that's fair because I didn't even get to the part
I'm not saying it's fair. And this is the whole problem. Like, this is the entire borderline experience. This is an ironic episode and video because I am trying to explain to you that it isn't necessarily factual or real, but I am feeling in my body right now, like, it feels like the fucking Titanic is sitting in my chest and it's sinking into my stomach. Like, that is the feeling of being like, you know everything, I know nothing, why the fuck am I alive? If everybody is just fucking smarter than me. Like, I feel like everybody has been telling me my whole life that, like, my ideas aren't possible and they don't work. And, like, just do it this way. And, like, you would be more successful. Just pay more attention. Just listen more before you talk. All of these things that, like, don't you think I would want to do that? Don't get a psychology degree. You're never going to be anything with it. You can't do anything with that. And I'm sorry because I don't want to be mean and I don't like my feelings, like, becoming so big that you don't get to have your own. It makes me feel guilty and it makes me feel shame. And it's stupid because it's literally, like, not worth it. If we rip up the floor or don't rip up the floor to put stupid peel and stick tile down, like, whatever at the end of the day. But, like, it feels like to me that you're taking over and making a project that I was excited about because I felt like it was, like, something that I could, like, give to our family and, like, do good for you. And now you're saying, like, I have to do something that, like, I can't do. Like, I don't have the, like, regulation or the knowledge to, like, rip up this flooring in, like, a very specific way. It's not like the entire kitchen flooring. It's flooring that's attached to the kitchen in a bathroom. So I'd have to rip it up in, like, a really clean way. And I don't feel like I can do that. Like, I felt like I was, like, developing a plan that, like, I was capable of, like, following through with. And then, like, I'm just sorry. Like, I don't like this being a part of, like, our experience. I don't like living like this, and I don't like it impacting you. And I don't like it impacting my ability to, like, create relationships and friendships with people because I just constantly feel like people are smarter than me, more capable than me. Okay, part two.
Part two.
So I listened back to that recording.
Yeah.
And it was hard to listen to because I just noticed myself looping.
Yeah.
And that's the ADHD and the borderline, just, like, looping and looping and looping and trying to, like, force you to understand how I was feeling. Mm-hmm. But I can't because you don't have borderline.
Right. Yeah, I don't.
And I also went down this whole thing of, like, oh my God, this is so embarrassing. People are gonna see just how borderline I am. Oh my God, if anyone I work with ever finds this recording, are they gonna fire me because they're gonna realize just how borderline I am? Like, talk about your experience of, like, observing me in that process of studying, but also, like, the completion of that and the fact that I also am very triggered by this thing and, like, how it impacts you.
Well, I guess, like, I mean, watching you prepare for the test was pretty wild because I was just, like, in my head, and this isn't meant to be, like, offensive, but I was just like, how did she get through school? Because it just seemed like you were just in this, like, fight or flight. And I was like, how the fuck did she do graduate school? Like, when all you do is...
Especially working full-time.
Yeah, and working full-time. And you weren't, like, very far along in your...
Oh, I was not doing anything that was going to help me for recovery. Like, I had a therapist that I saw once a week back then, but it was like CBT, old lady psychodynamic. Like, it wasn't helping me.
Yeah.
And I wasn't taking meds.
Yeah, this is what I was going to say. You, like, weren't medicated. You were still drinking. Like, I was so, like, watching you do that, I was like, whoa, holy shit. Like, if this is what it's like while you're medicated and in therapy and have been in therapy for a long time, you have your diagnoses and you're sober. I was like, I don't even know what it would have been like for you, like in school.
It was one breakdown after another. And yeah, it was not pretty. But like, I think that's part of why I developed a profound eating disorder, was it was the one thing that I had control over, and I could funnel all of that chaotic energy into this one obsessive thing.
Yeah, that makes a shit ton of sense. Like, you took all of your anxiety and your stress and all of your like inferiority and like all of your fears, and you funneled it and fed your eating disorder with it, right? So like that makes like a lot of sense that that's how you develop that, because like, how, not condoning obviously eating disorders, but like, how else were you going to like live through all of that chaos?
Well, and also like,
you know,
I had a really good group of three women and me, four women, who like really were like very supportive, and also there was a lot of like in comparing.
Yeah.
And I was pretty fat for the first year and a half, and that was always like the thing of like, well, I'm the fat one, I'm the ugly one, and also like, I'm getting my papers 2 points behind them.
Right. You were comparing yourself academically as well as physically.
Yeah, and
that's hard.
These women were like wonderful, and I didn't have the ability to like have safe relationships with two of the three of them because of that constant comparison.
Yeah.
And my friend Amanda, who was super, super close to me, and I love her and adore her, and she moved across the country, and that makes me bummed, but she was solid. Like, she was loving and supportive, and I felt safe with her, and I don't think I could have done it without her.
Mm-hmm.
But I also really regret not letting her in on what was happening with my body and my eating disorder for the end of it. And she's reached out to me actually after school, and as I've started talking about it more on Instagram, and she's been like, I didn't know that was happening, and I'm really sorry I missed that. And it's like, dude, that wasn't your fault.
Yep.
But I was a very chaotic during school. And the reason I bring this up is I graduated my master's with like a 3.96 GPA or something. And they graduated with like a 3.98. 3.99, or maybe it was I got a 3.94 and they got a 3.6 and a 3.8 and a 3.8. But I was just like, I'm the stupid one. I'm the chaotic one. I'm the crazy one. And everybody knows it.
Well, apparently not everybody knows it, because like, people missed your rampant eating disorder. So there's a good chance.
Sure. But also there was a lot of people in our program, because it was a cohort of like 50 people. There was a lot of people in our program who did not like me.
Well, I mean, what my mom always said is universal popularity is an impossible goal, right?
Sure.
But
I think the point of all of this is that systems can leave us feeling very othered. And for me, the experience of 26 years in a public school system. And my mom was a public school teacher. So like,
it was
really from birth to 26, I was institutionalized from that public school perspective, not knowing I had ADHD, and I felt stupid the entire time. And now this silly thing, like trying to redo our bathroom, the feeling of being stupid takes over.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
I can only imagine how tired you are. Yeah, I don't know. Like, yeah, watching you like study for the test was like, for me, it was very eye opening. It was like another little like layer, like another like, oh, this is like a glimpse into like what she
Well, what was eye-opening about it? Like, do you have any specifics?
It really...
Because it's all normal to me, so I don't know.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's your reality, right? Like, it's how you live every single day. So you're like, I don't know what it's like. But, like, looking from the outside in, like, so, like, I see this very intelligent, very capable human being when I look at you, right? Like, your intelligence... Your capability has never been brought into question in my mind. Not one time. I'm serious. Not one time. Like, never one time. Mm. You know what I mean? And the reason for that is because you have done many, many, many things that I consider to require a massive amount of intelligence and a massive amount of capability, right? Like, you traveled alone.
Well, I traveled alone, but I got a lot of help when shit got hard.
But no. But like, you still traveled alone, right? I've never traveled alone. I can't find my way out of a wet paper bag with directions and a flashlight. You know what I mean? So like, that to me, I was like, oh damn, like, she's just been all over the place. You know what I mean? And you like, and you have a really like.
But that was just because I was avoidant, not because I was smart.
I'm not saying you traveled because you were smart. I'm saying you were able to travel and get around on your own and be independent because you are intelligent, because you can do those things, because you are capable, right? And I think I look at people who travel I find that very like impressive, right? And like you always say that you paid to learn how to learn.
I did.
Right.
Well, public, like, particularly masters. My master's program taught me how to seek information and analyze information.
Right.
So, like, I can find answers generally faster than someone who doesn't have that, because they taught us how to do research. They taught us how to find knowledge. They taught us how to understand systems.
Right. But I just...
But that's not because I'm smart. It's because I had the privilege of learning that.
Right. But like...
Other people know that naturally.
Yeah. But like, I don't think that... You know, like, I think that like, there is a level of intelligence that comes with pursuing and wanting to pursue a master's degree, right? Like, there's privilege, right? Like, there's privilege, like, that people get to go to college and are able to do that. That's privilege, right? But the want and desire and the ability to go and do that and complete it, I do think takes, like, a level of intelligence.
But I think what I need you to understand is I'm going to have a butt for everything. And that's a my issue, and that's a borderline self-hate issue and whatever. But, like, I didn't go to graduate school because I was fucking stoked on it. I went to graduate school because I was bored, and I went to graduate school because I wanted my parents to love me and feel like they could be proud of me.
Right. Which I totally, like, I totally respect that that's how you view that, right? But I'm saying, like, from my point of view, like, looking at you, I'm like, oh shit, like, Sarah's fucking smart. You know, like, I think you're a great conversationalist. I think that you have a lot of common sense, and I think you have a lot of real world knowledge about a lot of stuff.
I do have, right? A lot of common sense.
Yeah, which is a type of intelligence, right? That you can't pay for. You can't buy common sense. You just can't. You
know? I'm just out here like, have they thought that one through?
Right. So, you know.
Wait. Pull it back a bit.
Yeah.
So I don't need you to give me the roundabout. Let's get straight to the answer.
Yeah. So you're an intelligent human being, right?
Yeah.
I could see why you thought you were stupid for 26 years, because you were put into a system that does not celebrate your type of intelligence.
Yeah.
Right? It punishes your type of intelligence. Like, why do you think I didn't go to college?
Yeah.
I didn't. I think that if I had gone to college, I would feel this very similar, obviously, like, I don't have borderline personality disorder, so I probably wouldn't feel it quite as severely, but I would feel just as stupid as you feel.
Totally.
I would. I do believe that.
Yeah.
Because I got out of high school and I was like, I'm a fucking idiot. Like,
right.
I barely graduated. You know what I mean? I did, but like, whatever. So I think that like being in a system for an extended period of time slowly breaks us and wears us down. And I think that public school works really, really well for people. And I think that there is a majority, like a percentage of people that it just doesn't work well for.
Yeah.
And you were funneled into that. And you continued it because that's how you were going to obtain what you wanted, right? Like what you wanted to do or what you thought you wanted to do and like, or what you were told you should do. Like that's how you found your worth, right? That's how you lived.
Yeah. And that's the thing is like, that is how I lived
right,
because I always had something to work towards. Yeah. And then I get my LCSW.
Yeah.
And I mean, seemingly there's nothing left.
I mean, no test you have to take, you know?
Yeah. I'm 29 years old. And this thing that I've established my worth with
is about to be over.
Is about to be over because right. When I finished graduate school, I still had the process of knowing I was going to work towards my LCSW. And that could be the thing that I was like, okay, well, when I get that, then I'll be this put together, grown up, intelligent right. woman who, you know, suddenly will start getting out of bed on time and brushing her teeth every day and like being the kind of coworker that can like go to work and, you know, get along with everyone and not have profound panic. Wrong-o.
Yeah. I mean,
nothing has changed. I still feel really stupid all of the time. The only thing that's changed is like in our conversation the other day, even though I was looping and even though I was emotional, I didn't tell you I fucking hated you.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't tell you we're getting divorced. Mm-hmm. I didn't, you know, like, and I am really proud of that. And I think like, if I go the rest of my life feeling stupid, which I will go the rest of my life having that trigger. I don't know that it will be triggered as often. But I mean, what's the option other than to like work through it, to navigate it?
Right.
And I think you and I are at a place where okay, we own this home. It was, we didn't know when we bought it that it used to be three garages.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful and wonderful and it needs some upgrades. It
has its quirks.
And so I'm worried and I think that's part of why this trigger is coming up a lot of like, we have a lot of work to do together.
Right.
To get this house to the place that we want it to be. And I take a lot of pride in our home and have a certain desire for it to be a certain way. And we can't pay somebody to come in and do that. It's things that we have to do on our own. And I think maybe like this trigger is coming up preventatively because I want it to be a good experience for us. And I don't want it to be something that we fight through. And I want to feel like we can spend 50 years owning this property. Whether or not we live in it forever, I don't know. But like owning this property and making it ours and being able to change it over the years and being able to do it together in a positive way with that leaves us with good memories, you know? Like I don't have any good memories of my home with my ex-wife.
Right. Yeah, I mean, what a vulnerable thing, right? Like what a vulnerable thing to now be doing again in a way with somebody, right? Like,
yeah, I just don't want to feel stupid.
Right. Like, but that's what I'm saying. Like,
and maybe that's just the borderline experience. Maybe we're just out here feeling stupid. I think that is one of my major things because my mom was a teacher.
Right.
And other people who are borderline have other major things.
Totally. Like we all have our different things, you know what I mean? So I don't know. I think that like, I don't know. I'm glad that we're podcasting about this and like, I think that it's an important thing to talk about because, you know, I don't think that your experience in feeling stupid is a singular experience. I'm sure plenty of people have felt or do feel that way. You know what I mean? So I think it's important that you talk about such a massive trigger. And also, like, I want to circle back to you saying, like, you thought your LCSW, you're going to wake up and be this put together woman, you know, whatever.
If anyone's watching this, I did brush my teeth today. My hair? Man. I don't know when the last time I showered was.
Yesterday, wasn't it? No. I don't know.
Maybe I showered the day before.
But what I was going to say is that your milestones look different.
Yeah.
Like you telling me, or it's rather, sorry, not telling me that you fucking hated me and we're getting divorced when you're super triggered, mega triggered, like very, very triggered, and you're looping and I'm looping, you know, like that's a huge milestone. Like yeah. you're, you know, it, and it probably, you know, feels really small because, oh, blah, blah, normal people can do that. Well, fuck that. Like, that's a huge deal, right? That's, your milestones just look different.
Yeah.
You know, just like my milestones look different. You know?
I did.
I think that's important to know.
It know? Is. And it's one of the things, like I tell all of my new clients in therapy, because I'm, like, I think a big part of this trigger also is, like, I'm going into, what, year three of being a full-time therapist. I have a caseload of 40 clients. For the last 3 years, I've been seeing, you know, 25 to 30 clients a week in individual therapy. I feel this, like, fear of, well, if I'm stupid or if my borderline makes me fuck up in sessions, which I'm impulsive. I say things that aren't correct sometimes, you know? Like, I've literally said to a client in therapy, like, let's be real about that. Like, I kind of think what you just told me is a little bullshit. Right. And yeah. for that particular client, she literally said to me, the way you said that to me works for me because that's my culture and that's the way I was raised. And that language makes sense of like you trying to hold me accountable. And I knew that about her, but I also think like we have to meet people where they're at and based on that client's experience and demographics and diagnosis, I knew that that was like gonna work for her, but also like, what if it didn't? And like, what if she hated me for that statement? And what if she thinks that I'm unethical? And what if I hurt her? And like, that wasn't the case. And I have established therapeutic rapport in a relationship with her, but like that statement has like stood out in my head of like, my God, am I a fucking terrible therapist? Am I an awful therapist? Am I so stupid? Is this all gonna go away? Do people hate me? You know, like, I know other therapists probably wouldn't say to somebody, let's look at that. I kind of think you're bullshitting me, you know? Yeah. And like, I'm not like other therapists. So does that mean I'm gonna do harm?
No, I think that...
And that really triggers my, like, imposter syndrome and my right. feeling of being stupid. And I actually said to my therapist last week when I saw her, that's something we need to talk about at our next appointment. So that's good.
Yeah, I think that is good. I think that, like, when you say, like, I'm not like other therapists, that's true, right? You're not. And I think that, like, that goes into, like, when I was learning how to pierce.
We have, like, 3 more minutes.
Okay, I'll make it quick. When I was learning how to pierce, bedside manner was really stressed on me. And finding my natural rhythm was really hard because I was being taught by 2 people who were completely different.
Yeah.
And generally, I will mirror somebody. I copy them and their mannerisms and the things they do to learn, like, okay, they do it this way. This is how I'm going to do it until I'm comfortable. And then I'll do it. And then I'll start changing it to fit me. Right. I couldn't do that with bedside manner because I would say things that I had watched my mentors say successfully. And I have clients who are pissed.
Yeah.
But the moment I stopped, well, the moment I like really tried just to be myself, as hokey as that sounds, but I was like, well, I would never say that.
Yeah,
I would say this, though, it started to kind of click. And there were moments when I was myself and clients did not like me.
Yeah,
that happens. But I don't think that.
Well, and I've used that fact checking of like.
Yeah.
I think I've had one client over the last 3 years say like, this is not a good fit. And I've had several clients where I've said to them, I don't know if you feel like I'm a good fit for you. I don't think this is working. Mm-hmm. And that went well, but like my fact checking of being like, I've seen people's lives change, not because of me as a therapist, but just because like, that's the process of therapy. And I was playing you know, my part well or whatever. And I've also had clients, many clients come back to me years later. So like, I can do that fact checking, but I still feel in my gut this like hole of like, if I could just fill that hole with feeling like I'm okay or good enough, like that would be cool. I don't know that that's coming though. So I think the answer is just to live.
Yeah. I mean, you are okay and you are good enough.
Okay, so wow, what a wild ride. Editing this was a nightmare, and it also forced me to revisit the dysregulation and just how hard I am on myself and how much work I have left to do. I don't like listening to myself say so many bad things about myself, and yet I know that's like the borderline experience, is so many of us feel like we don't know who we are outside of these external factors, and we don't like ourselves, and this chronic feeling of emptiness. And, you know, if you're not sure what all the borderline symptoms are, feel free to listen to the first like 10 episodes of this podcast, because we go in depth, but it's hard to listen. And it was also hard to let myself leave in a lot of those parts, leave in all of my fears about, am I a good therapist or not? And in my brain, what happens when I'm not, and how my life falls apart, and all of the intrusive thoughts and rumination. This topic of, am I worthy or am I good enough, which results in, am I successful, which results in, do I have enough money? This is by far the hardest, most reoccurring, ruminating kind of like thought pattern in my life. And so sharing it is really scary, but I appreciate everybody who got to the end. This was a long episode. And I'm interested to see how people will respond to it. I hope that they are able to respond with grace for me. And I hope it wasn't too triggering to listen to Talon and I just want to make sure that I say that we repaired, and we both kind of understood. And I want to say how silly I sounded when I kept asking the same questions over and over and over again. And I think it was important that we hear that he was feeling like attacked. You could hear that in his voice, that he was starting to feel like he had to shut down. And I don't want that for him. So we keep doing the work. Okay, y'all, if you want to stay tuned for podcasts we have coming up next, be sure to subscribe wherever you get your content. If you can leave us a rating and a review, that helps us find our new listeners and community, and we love that. If you want to leave us a voicemail or just kind of check out what's going on, our website is boldbeautifulborderline.com, and we'll see you next week.